Hey, I'm Bob Runkle, and for as long as I can remember, I've loved pop culture. Despite the challenges I've faced in my life, pop culture has always been there for me. I love talking to people and being a platform for others to share their thoughts, stories. Because if there's one thing I never get tired of, it's seeing driven, talented, and inspiring individuals follow their dreams, no matter what obstacles are in their way. And I know a thing or two about that. Welcome to the DJ Bob Show. I'm DJ Bob. Roll it. So today is a monumental episode for me and my very special guest, co-host for this one. I happen to like her a lot, so much that I asked her to marry me. Sydney is here.
Fiance. It's not like this is a big deal or anything.
Nope. But why? Just go into it.
Not like this guest has literally changed my life forever. Literally, from the movie that he was in.
Yeah. And let's talk about that, because we're going to do a little bit of a different thing. We're going to do a before the interview and a little afterthought. Why do you think that movie, that day, led to this lifelong interest of you loving these beings?
I just saw Keiko and I was like, that's an interesting looking animal. I want to know more.
And you then proceeded to find out more for the next 22 years.
Yeah.
Before he hops on this call, what does this conversation mean to you? I mean, we're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk about his current work, but like you said, Free Willy changed your life. So is this conversation in turn life-changing as well?
Yeah. Because I can finally thank like one of the people that did this.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. And while we're here, you have an amazing Facebook page called Orca Crisis, and normally you don't like to kind of say that you're behind it, but I feel like we should today.
Yeah.
So, what can people expect from it? What can people find when they go there?
Fun pictures of orcas doing orca things, because that's what orcas do.
Yes. And for those that say my podcast is a hobby, suck it. And for those that say her Orca Crisis Facebook page is a hobby,
suck it.
Because I've been with her several times throughout the process of making these graphics, and it's a full-time job.
It is.
So let's stop talking, and before the call happens, what are you thinking in your head right now?
Oh my God, I'm going to meet Jesse.
And with that, we'll see you on the other side of our conversation with Jason James Richter. We'll be back in a bit.
Yes.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. We're finally here.
Seriously.
Yeah, I know. It's been so long since you reached out to me, and then the strike and the holiday season and everything else. So I am grateful to be here, and thank you guys for having me on the program. I'm happy to chat with you.
So my first question for you is, what is the most rewarding part about being an actor and the most challenging part about being an actor, especially being known for something that was 30, 31 years ago,
and not being known past that in some people's eyes.
So I think one of the great things about the profession is all of the people that I've gotten to work with over the years, from the cast to the crews. And I don't know if it's something that's ever I've really thought about, that, you know, Free Willy is sort of the calling card for me. I've always been, you know, blessed with the fact that I've continued to work when I wanted to work. And I guess if you let that be, you know, if for me as an actor, if I just dwelled on the fact that that's it, then I suppose I'd only really be interested in acting because of fame. And fame is like the least interesting part of being an actor. It's the kind of the worst part of being a working actor is fame, in my opinion. So the fact that, you know, 30 years on from Free Willy, you know, I can walk down the street and people don't necessarily recognize me, is kind of a blessing, because it was sort of a trap when I was young. I'm sort of grateful to grow up not in the time of social media that I grew up in, because of the challenges that young artists now face. But the best part of acting is the work itself. It's you know, it's a rewarding profession. I get to do something different all the time, and I get to do it with incredibly talented and intelligent and interesting people. And you know, in all the years that I've done this, I mean, it's funny because most interviews are about Free Willy. People want to talk to me about that, and I'm happy to do it. You know, I don't mind at all. But nobody's ever asked me, you know, as an actor, who are the people that I've worked with? I mean, if you look at the list of people that I've had the privilege of sharing a screen with, I'm the luckiest guy in the world, man.
Yeah, the one that kind of blows my mind is Jack Black.
I mean, Jack Black. Yeah, Jack Black. And in that film, Neverending Story 3, there's Adrian Dorvell. He was a fantastic character actor that I had the opportunity to work with. Ryan Bowman. Who else in that cast? I mean, everybody in that cast. Everybody in that cast was really special people. Mike Madsen, I worked with, obviously, from Free Willy. Jane Atkinson, that was her first film. Lori Petty, the great Lori Petty, like the completely, like, slept on, in my opinion, Lori Petty. I mean, I know she's well known in her own right, but I feel like she should just be, you know, she was doing like girl power and, you know, playing female action heroes that were just strong and multidimensional 30 years ago. So I had the privilege of working with her. Diane Wiest, she's an Oscar winner, you know, Chevy Chase. I just made a movie and got to do a scene with Rami Malek, who's an incredibly gifted actor, obviously a very kind gentleman. Those people, you know, John Lee Hancock, Simon Windsor, Dwight Little, the directors, Ron Schwory. I mean, he was a, you know, Oscar winning producer. I just, you know, Michael T. Williamson, who was in Free Willy, Danielle Harris, who I just worked with again. She was my first film. She was in Free Willy. She was already like a grizzled veteran actress at 12 or something, or 13 or 14. I think I was a few years younger than her. And I just did a film with her, and I produced it and had a small part in it called Natty Knox, and just got to work with her again. And she is just, she's a dream. You know, she's amazing. And on that film, I just worked with Robert Englund and Bill Moseley. So I don't know. I feel like a pretty lucky guy. You know, people know me for Free Willy, but it's like, all right, you know, not a bad deal.
I mean, you're working with no names.
Yeah. So, you know, I got to hang out with one of the guys from the Monkees, and I was a guest star in Melissa Joan Hart's program back in the day. I worked with Michael Ritchie, who did the Fletch movies, and Miko Hughes was in that film, who's, you know, an incredible, you know, was an incredible actor and on to do other things with his life. And, Michael Bacall was actually in Free Willy. He's a big time Hollywood writer now. And so, like, you know, it's been cool, man. So I think that's been the biggest privilege, the biggest struggle probably for me. I guess I would harken back to what I said before, which is the fame part of it. It's not particularly a fun thing. Although, you know, when you're interacting with fans, that's like one thing. But when you're dealing with, I guess, the press and the public stuff, it's just, it's unfortunate. You know, it's unpleasant mostly.
You touched on social media a little bit earlier. And do you feel like if social media was around at the height of Free Willy, do you think there would be that much of a movement to, you know, help Keiko get free?
Yeah, I think it would have been.
It would have been even sooner.
Yeah, it would have been a bigger reaction, I think, honestly, because for all intents and purposes, it was like a viral movement where people, the kids that saw the phone number at the end of the movie, and, you know, wanted their parents to call and to help donate to this cause. And they ended up, you know, raising quite a bit of money. They moved him to a research facility in Oregon. And from there, they moved him to the Icelandic waters, and where he, you know, was for quite a while. And unfortunately, he died relatively young. And they learned a lot from him. He was a case study. I know that they've tried to do it with other animals, whales in captivity. But I'm like, by no means, I'm not a marine biologist, but I did have the opportunity to be on a show with one and I learned a whole lot, I'll tell you what.
So, yeah. So that kind of leads me to talk about why I reached out to you. Not only did I love the film growing up, but Sydney, when we first started dating, one of the first things that she said to me was she had this lifelong fascination with orcas, and it's partially thanks.
Not partially, it is fully Free Willy.
Oh, well, that's so sweet. I'm glad the film touched you in that way.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's one of the profound effects of that film. And I think that's why people keep seeking me out to do interviews and talk about it.
So, Sid, do you want to go into, you know, what exactly happened after you first saw the film?
I mean, the first thing, I saw the film, and my first reaction was literally, Jesse's reaction was, like, what is that? Like, well, that's a cool animal. Like, I want to know more.
Mm-hmm.
Literally my first reaction.
He's been advocating for these beings ever since.
Yep.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad it inspired that kind of inquisitiveness in you and that you turned that into action.
Yeah.
That's great.
So I know, Sid, do you have any questions that you wanted to ask? Or?
What was your first reaction to, like, meeting Keiko?
Been a long time. It was definitely, exciting. You know, I knew well ahead of time that I was going to be interacting with this animal. And I don't know at the time when they told me, you know, I was like going to do a bunch of research and figure it out. I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to get to do like scenes with hang out, you know, I can't explain to you how truly naive I was at that age. I might still be, but at that age, I was completely, you know, immersed in the fantasy. So I didn't come to it with any kind of fear. I do remember the first day going down there and meeting him and being just completely stunned. Who I was, you know, everybody was having the same kind of reaction to him, the entire cast. I should not leave out, you know, the great August Schellenberg himself, who played Randolph in the film. I remember doing many a scenes and standing next to Augie and him saying to me, you know, you need to remember this because this is a special thing that we're doing. And he, you know, at that age, gave me, you know, some real insights. And But yeah, first meeting him was a kind of, you know, you're just amazed, right? You're just in wonderment. He's a large animal. He's clearly, they're clearly super smart. I don't know if they're going to get in a plane and fly anywhere, but they're pretty smart as in terms of, like, you know, a sea creature. They might be a little smarter than most people, you know. I don't know.
Honestly, that's what I think. Things are going
these days. Yeah. But they're you know, they're inquisitive. What you're asking me, and I'll try to be short about it, is that what I immediately understood, even at a very tender age of 11 or 12 when I made the film, was that this animal was incredibly intuitive and smart. And I immediately bonded with him, and I had no fear of him whatsoever, although I probably should have been, but I just didn't. So.
Wow.
And that comes across, because when people hear just the name orca, they just think of, like, danger. And
no, they think of killer whale.
Well, yeah, I think part of the reason why the film, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't mean to misremember anything from anybody else, but what I remember was part of the reason why Lauren Shuler Donner, Dick Donner, Jenny Lou Tugin, Penelope Ann Phosphor, Keith Walker, the original people involved in making Free Willy, why they wanted to make the movie was in response to a film that was produced in 75, 1975, called Orca, which depicted them as completely.
Oh, yeah.
And then all throughout the years, just the association of killer whale and et cetera, in the public zeitgeist, I guess, in the public mind. And I think, you know, Lauren and Dick, all of them were really active in environmental and animal rights movements, and they wanted to do something. And Keith Walker wrote the original script, and he was the father in the movie called The Goonies, which when I was young, I was obsessed with. So when I meet Sean Astin, all I want to talk to him about is the freaking Goonies.
Yeah.
I'm like, Lord of the Rings, whatever. What about the Goonies? So anyway, but he, Keith Walker, and I was obsessed with that film as a child. And, you know, I come to my first film experience was Free Willy. And I ended up working with all of the people that made the Goonies, which was my all time. You know, I could quote you word for word every single line of the film right now at just about to turn 44 years old. So that's how profound of a film that was for me. And, you know, I wanted to be like those kids. So at any rate, they all wanted to make the movie because of exactly what you said, Sydney, which is there was a relatively negative perception of killer whales in the public mind. And anybody who's worked with these animals or spent any time researching them or understanding them knows that that is a mischaracterization. Complete.
Yeah.
Although they are intelligent. So, you know, with intelligence comes cruelty. I hate to tell you that, but that's part of life. Nature is, you know, think of human beings. I mean, we're pretty clever. We could be pretty, pretty cruel. So, you know, it's,
yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah. And I've learned so much about orcas through shit I didn't know half of what I know now, because she's been so, you know, in this world. And it's got to be cool for you to know that, like Sid, there are tons of viewers of this film that have taken this and have become marine biologists or become interested in these beings. So obviously you don't think that when you're making it, but when did you first realize that this film was more than 100, like an hour and 30 minutes of just?
I think the whole, from the get-go. I mean, from the very first day of filming, for the rest of my career as an actor, that film had such an incredible reverberatory weight to it. It affected the psyche of a whole generation, really. And it is in part, but not entirely, but it absolutely in part responsible for modern environmental animal rights movement. People, like you said, becoming marine biologists, becoming more interested in the oceans in general. For the longest time, you know, the ocean, which, you know, fortunately until this day is still treated like the world's garbage can. And it's probably not a good idea if we want to, you know, keep living on this pretty cool patch of dirt called Earth. We should probably, you know, so it's been, you know, the film's been a part of all that. But, you know, that's a, I think that's been, you know, the message of the film. Me as an actor, how I feel about it is I became, you know, I guess kind of an unwilling spokesperson for the longest time, because I'm, like I said, I'm an actor, not an animal rights activist. I'm not an environmentalist movement person, I'm an entertainer, and I do have personal things that I support and the causes I believe in and ideas and stuff, but I don't always feel the necessary need to be public and out about it and screaming it out. And, you know, you just do what you do, right? Like, I don't know. It's just my personal, but yes, I've seen the effect of the film itself. Yeah.
It's really interesting you say that, because when people meet us, they see us, you know, with disabilities, and then I sometimes automatically become the poster child for people with disabilities who create and do podcasts. And it's like, I just want to be a guy who does a podcast that happens to have a disability. I don't want to be defined by it, but I feel like that comes with the territory sometimes.
Well, yeah, you know, and you more than me, but like you, I understand, you know, perception is power. So when people see you and they see your girlfriend and you have this podcast, and they just don't go podcast, they go, guy with disabilities has a podcast. And I understand what you mean, because they go, oh, the kid from Free Willy is in blah, blah, blah movie.
Yeah.
I can't get away from it. I can't get away from being 12 at any rate. No, I understand what you mean. I people will get there, and you'll find your audience. You know, I think,
14 years I've been doing this, so I'm not new, but it's,
yeah, you've been in it for a second, right?
But it's just like, there are some people like, it's so amazing that you do all of this despite your disabilities. Like, I'd be doing this anyway.
Right.
If anything, it helped.
Right. Right. They think, they probably think they're being nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. I get you.
But, you know, it's cool. The on the flip side of that, when people see me and Kid engaged and, you know, starting a life, they're like, oh, that's so cute. And it's like, we don't say that to you.
Yeah, right.
That's another misconception about Free Willy, is like, oh, the bond between Jesse and Willy is so cute and sweet. No. It's like deep. Like, this kid is willing to like steal his dad's truck to rescue this animal. Like, that's not cute and sweet.
Yeah, I hear you. I think if you actually blueprint it Free Willy, you put it down on, and you take away what you said, the sweetness from it, you have a homeless kid who gets caught up in a foster care system and is lucky enough to end up with a loving set of parents. Which is not true in every case. And then, you know, ends up kidnapping a whale from an amusement park, stealing a vehicle. Like, you know, and by the way, the bad guys in the film, you know, is Michael Ironside, who's an incredible character actor. I mean, you know, Total Recall, and, you know, it's just an endless line of incredible films that man's made. The very great, very capable character actor, Mr. Richard Reel. It's fantastic. Wade and Dial, the two bad guys. At any rate, yes, Sydney. I mean, if you take the movie part out of it and you just look at it, what it is, it's about one human being seeing his own the limitations of his own life.
Yeah.
And the inability for him to control anything. And to see this in another being, and then decide, you know what, I can't escape my situation, but I can help you escape yours.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the essence of what it is, if you decide to take it seriously, I guess. But it is a kid's movie.
Yeah. I mean, but it did so much more for, you know, the exposure of these beings. I mean, when people hear the term orca, they think of Free Willy. What you did is forever associated with the being. So that's got to be cool for you too.
Oh, big time. Yeah, no, I mean, what we've all just been, you know, just been talking about, the what it's inspired, I think, is a really great thing. And I'm glad to have been a part of something. If I was going to be known for one thing for the rest of my flipping life, that is a positive thing, that it had a positive effect on the world. It was an honest message. It wasn't wrapped in politics. It was just an honest message about right and wrong, about very simple truths. You know what I mean? And perhaps maybe people with you and Sid, you know, doing this podcast will help them, you know, take the stigmatization out of a disability and what they perceive people in your situation are capable of doing or not doing. Yeah. You guys are living that. So I would say, you know, my hat's off to you. So I'm just an actor. Like I said, I'm a meat puppet for a living. You guys are like doing something. So
Well now we're connected, and I don't think this is the last time that we're going to speak, for sure. Because there's so much stuff to share. I mean, the thing that we both share, that we all share, is the passion for doing what we love and being creative and sharing what's important. And with that, Jason, you've recently taken more of the creative side of filmmaking. You've produced films, and you've kind of been on the other end. You know, was it kind of like going to school for you, like learning these things, or was it like, because I've been on a film set, I kind of know my way around?
I, you know, my education is being on film sets. So for me to transition from front of the camera to behind the camera is a little easier for me than some, but a little harder than others. So I'm a student of the craft of acting. I'm a student of the craft of filmmaking. So no matter what I've done, as long as I've done it, every set I've been on, I've faced some unique challenge or learned something new about filmmaking, or not something new about acting, the process of acting, something new about the art itself. And that is the most addictive thing about getting to be a filmmaker, getting to be an actor, is that it's endlessly. You do it, but every time you do it, you know, there's a blueprint, there's a way, but it's, you learn things, you experience things, you encounter things, you overcome things. So for me, you know, from being involved in the industry from such a young age, and from the vantage point that I had of getting to watch incredible masters work this craft, and I learned a lot. And I'm shocked, actually, when I started, because I left the industry for a little while, but when I came back, I was actually, it's like riding a bike. I was just like, oh, I know how to do this, and can actually block a scene, and I understand some basic things about camera stuff, and yeah, this isn't that much of a mystery, you know. And I would never say it's not difficult, but it can, you know, it's demystified for me, yeah, for sure.
I love that, because if no one's going to do it for you, you got to do it yourself. And you took the leap, and now you're on the creative side of things. And that's got to be so rewarding, being able to express what you want to convey on screen.
Yeah, it has been. I had an opportunity to work with some great people and collaborate to make some new things. I associate produced a film called Last Rampage back in 2016. That's Robert Patrick and Heather Graham, Bruce Davidson. Great young ensemble cast. Chris Browning, fantastic actor. Yeah. Charlotte Chatterback. She's amazing. Yeah, I doing that, I learned a lot from that. But I think I actually stepped back to it in 2008 or 2009. I started out as just like a PA, director's assistant. I've been a PA on like $75 million films and screamed at, chased around. So I've, you know, I've learned both sides of everything, from things I didn't, you know, like having an intuitive understanding about it is one thing, but also actually going and signing up and taking a position that's way lower than what you're used to and just doing it. You know, you learn something about the industry, you learn something about yourself, you learn something about the type of creative people you're around. I think the main reason I started to become more active in my own creative process was because I was more interested in creating a network of people who I truly love working with and that are in it for the right reasons. Because a lot of people are involved in the movie business or filmmaking or entertainment. I get it for fame and money and all those things, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, if you're not making stuff that you're truly passionate about and then also interested in like making an audience happy, then why are you doing it?
Yeah. And do you feel like, you know, being a child star, when you were a child star, because I feel like after the Macaulay Culkin boom in Home Alone, there became these vehicles for actors such as yourself. And when Free Willy opened, it was a pretty big success. It was huge. It was massive. But do you feel like in this day and age, there could be a child actor with the type of pull that Free Willy or Home Alone had? That's kind of like a lost art.
Interesting point. I've never thought about it that way, but yeah, I don't, maybe. The market was different then. Free Willy was the first family film that Warner Brothers produced under the family film division. A lot of people think it was a Disney movie, but it's not. It's a Warner Brothers movie.
That's a common misconception that I hate.
I get it all the time. They're like, yeah, it was like working for Disney. Like, I don't know. I mean, I do. I've worked for Disney, but, you know, not on that movie. But so, but anyway, excuse me. You know, the industry has changed so much with the way the streams are. I think the most famous kids now probably are the kids that are online, that are doing like YouTube and TikTok and Instagram, and that have millions of followers and for whatever it is that they do. Those are probably the new child stars, if you will.
I will say one of my favorite actors that kind of harken back to that child actor kind of vibe with Jacob Tremblay in Room and Wonder. And I hadn't seen a child actor that strong in so long. And
yeah, he's great. Haley Joel Osment, there's a bunch of them.
Yeah. This is kind of a funny question, and I want your opinion on this. So, IMDb is like Wikipedia for film nerds. Anybody could insert anything on that website. What is the weirdest bit of trivia you've seen about yourself in the IMDb or elsewhere? They are like, where did they get that from?
Oh.
If you feel comfortable.
I don't know if I've looked at the IMDb thing particularly, but I do know that the Wikipedia is not right.
Like, I saw something about like
there's like a lot of nonsense about
movies. I saw something about like two Japanese commercials.
Yeah. No, I don't know where that's been following me around for years. I have no idea where that came from. I don't know where that story got started. not a Jacksonville Jaguars fan. I I don't know. There's a bunch of stuff. I don't know. There was a rumor that I died years ago, but you know, that's interesting because I don't do a lot of press. I don't do a lot of media. I don't know. People pick up stuff, man. I don't know. The theater of the mind, right?
And this question, I've been wanting to ask you this since we first corresponded. You mentioned that you don't do a lot of media. So what compelled you to do this?
It was getting towards the end of the year when you messaged me. So I was like, you know, why not? And then you told me a little bit about yourself. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, then I feel like I'm making, you know, I'll do your guys' show. I don't know. If people are interested in what I'm up to, they can find you guys.
Thanks, awesome.
So it's all good.
It is.
We can be your buffer.
There you go.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I don't do a lot. And I do get, not that I'm like tooting my own horn, but you know, I get frequently asked to do nostalgia things and this and that, all this kind of stuff. And I just,
yeah, that's what I want. Because that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to talk to you and just casually, because that movie means so much to Sid, I wanted to talk about it, but we're just hanging out. And that's the cool approach that I like to bring to these conversations, rather than, hey, remember that kid from that thing?
I am that kid from that thing. I was doing a, I'm still kind of working on a thing called Dolphin Boy, which is loosely based on my life. At one point I was thinking of calling it that kid from that thing. Because that was like so many years of going into the grocery store. Are you like, I know you. Like, no, you don't. No, I went to high school with you. No, you didn't.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. You think you did, but you didn't. You know, it was...
Yeah, I mean, there are things like I saw on your IMDb that you were on an episode of Rugrats.
Indeed, I was.
And I remember that episode. That, what was it like kind of doing animation stuff? Had you done that before?
Up until that point, I hadn't. But because of, you know, the recent, whatever my recent fame at that point was, they were like, oh, we'd love to have him in. So, you know, I started doing voiceover stuff. I did a little bit here and there, but I didn't go too far into it. I would love to do more of it. I actually just did a couple of voice reels. So I'm going to try to explore that a little bit more this year and see where that takes me. Cause I love watching animation. I love watching cartoons and, you know, silly ones to the more, you know, sophisticated or risque ones or whatever, adult animation stuff, which is fun. So yeah, I did that, and that was that. I remember, you know, it was a classy Calypso, or I forget the
name. Classy Shupo.
Yeah. Yes, that's correct. And they had a studio down in Hollywood. So I remember driving down there that day and going into the studio and seeing all of their, you know, I loved the Rugrats when I was a kid. And so it was, you know, it was an honor to get to do it. It was a lot of fun. I wish I would have gotten to do one for The Simpsons or South Park or any of the other ones that have parodied. If they call me, I'm a yes, 100%. They don't even have to pay me. I'll do it for free. I don't care.
It's like, you didn't put me in the Free Willy cartoon.
Seriously. I feel slapped. The fact that anybody even remembers is, you know, is the blessing, right? What the coolest part of it, of Free Willy for me now, is when, you know, somebody who's my age or a little younger walks up to me and they have kids and they've shown them the movie and they're like, I showed my kids the movie and they were bored out of their mind, but I still love it. I just think it's
so good. Oh, well, I'm planning on doing that with my nephew when he turns 7, because that's when I watched the movie. I was 7. So when he turns 7, I'm going to like show him the movie and be like, look at this.
Look at this. Sit down and look. Get off your iPad and look at this. That's fantastic.
It's actually really cool for our anniversary. Last year, I got her it's a canvas, but it's all the color palette of Free Willy in sequential order of the movie.
Wow.
It's like a painting. It's really cool.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
But, you know, I think longevity is so important. And this might sound deep and philosophical, but what would you like to be remembered for? Not specific projects, but just like as a collaborator, what do you think your strengths are that people gravitate towards?
You know, among my colleagues and people that I've worked with, I hope not to be remembered as somebody who was fun to work with, who was creative, who always brought positive energy to wherever they went and tried to do the best that they possibly could. In terms of how the world, you know, they'll remember me as the kid from Free Willy. I mean, I'll be 72 and they'll be like, today the boy from Free Willy died at the age of 72. You know what I mean? And then they'll show clips of me with the well, and that'll be the it. I'm not fighting that. You know what I mean? Like, that's just life. That's what it is. What can I do about it? The fact I'm even getting remembered. I mean, seriously, like, how many people just fade off, you know, off to the pages of whatever life they lived? And yeah, they meant to whoever they meant to, but they're gone. They're this guy. If in fact I'm even mentioned, it's like, you know, dude, I don't know. In this life, you just try to do good, be good, try to help people where you can, and just be grateful for what you get. Cause you just, I don't know, you know, I just so grateful.
I know that kid, he's probably interested in this too. And I'm just curious, when the movie was popular and at its height, was there a line that people would always ask you to say, or a quote or something that you were just like, oh, I'm sick of this?
I think some people wanted me to, you know, do the breakwater moment a lot. They'd, can you do the thing? And I just would look at them like, I would do interviews, and, you know, I know that they're going to use like some kind of CGI or green screen backdrop, and they just want to do it so they can just like shoot the well over me or whatever. I just wouldn't do it. I never was mad about it or bitter about it. I just wouldn't do it. I was like, whatever.
Yeah, because it's like, I just feel like some people are so against stuff from their past, and it's like, you can either choose to do that, or you can either choose to do what you're doing, which is embrace it. And that's so commendable.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Bob and I have a quote that it's when Randolph's like, Willie's worth $1 million. And then you say, $1 million?
We quote that all the time.
That's fantastic. That's great. I think the one we quote around the house in Free Willy 2 is this whole cove. I do that one all the time.
We owe a lot of our, you know, our bond to you. Cause like to you guys, cause one of the first things that she had told me, she's like, look, I've had a fascination with orcas my entire life. And if you can't deal with that, then
hey, everybody's got their deal breaker. She liked
it. But I embraced it. I embraced it. And I've learned a lot. And I'm sure that what we talked about Keiko earlier, but what did you learn about yourself through working with Keiko, looking back at it now? Because that's like an out-of-body experience, but what do you take away most from working with such an intelligent being?
I think the best way to quantify it would be like, for me, as a very, you know, young boy, I was only 11 or 12. I think the entire experience taught me not only about Keiko, which is like an incredibly fascinating creature, you know, orca whales and so on and so forth, but about human beings. Everybody on that set, you know, I had encounters with adults, obviously, as a child, you know, normal, whatever. But when you go to make a, when you make a film and you're the lead actor in a film, whether you're a child or you're an adult, you work, you know, a full day, and to be a lead in a big production like that, those 300 people are completely reliant on you every day for a paycheck. Cause if you don't show up, they don't get paid. You know what I mean? Like if you leave early, then they don't get a full thing. If you're, you know what I mean? Like you have a lot, you're driving the whole thing. So I learned a lot about like how to deal with adults at a very young age, how to manage my emotions, how to manage other people. Yeah. I don't always say I was very good at it, but you know, I did learn those things from that experience. And then from Keiko, just obvious, you know, it's so clear to anybody that it's probably not a good idea to keep these things locked up and make them do tricks for money. It is, you know, but you can say that, but you can say there is a good reason to research, to keep these, keep animals for research, to understand them, to better help them in the wild. I would say, you know, the showman part of it all is the tragedy. But I think marine biology, aquariums, these things like that, they need funds somehow to continue to do really valuable research. And not to, you know, SeaWorld in its own right probably does it. I know that people aren't fans of it. I get it. I get the reason why. But I know that they've probably done a lot of research as a result of those shows and things to probably improve the lives of orcas in captivity in general. And then that research itself can be used out in the wild to study these animals itself and so on and so forth. But it's a double-edged sword, obviously, and I fully fall on the side of not wanting to. I don't think that, you know, animals being paraded for exhibition for money is a good idea. Is a bad idea.
Yeah, there was a real heartbreaking documentary on Netflix. It's Netflix, right, kid?
Yeah.
Called Blackfish. And that, alongside your movie, really opened people's eyes to how, you know, how poorly these beings are treated. But it shouldn't. It's sad that it takes pieces of media to open people's eyes.
Yeah, you know, but that seems to be the truth in every instance, right? You know, people will do shady things in shady places, and then you put some light on it, and suddenly they're like, oh, we feel bad, we shouldn't have done this. And that's kind of how it works. I mean, you know, at least if the media is doing its job, right? They're informing the public of things that
yeah.
The public would probably disagree with if it was aware of. And so.
So we've been having this conversation, and I just wanted to personally thank you on the behalf of Sydney and myself. Thank you so much for hanging with us. And this is so, I know that this was on my bucket list as well as Sid's bucket list, just to have a conversation with you, because when I don't like to use the term interview, because sometimes people, you know, get weird when they hear the term interview. So we're just talking and having a conversation. So thank you so much for joining us.
This thank you.
It does.
Thank you too, Sydney. Thank you guys. I truly appreciate the invite to come talk to you, and I'm glad I did.
Before we wrap up, Sid.
Yeah.
The floor is over to you. You got any?
Thank you, Keiko. Thank you, Keiko.
Oh yeah.
For being the other star of the movie.
He's the big star, honestly. He's the star, not me.
That's the other thing. Like, people forget, oh, right, the whale.
They don't act.
He has a name. Yeah. His name is Keiko.
Yeah, Keiko. Willie, the orca from the movie. You know, I feel you, Sydney. I think respect due where respect is due. But at the bottom line, like you, message is out there. People know that Keiko Willie, the captive orca was freed, then they know that it's possible that it could be done for others. However, you know, it's very risky. So, and I've been asked to, you know, endorse certain movements and things, and I haven't, because I'm not a scientist at the end of the day. But at any rate, I don't mean to go on, but yes, Willie, Keiko.
Yes.
So where can people connect with you on social media? I know you're not much in there, but you're
I'm here, there, everywhere. No, Instagram is the one that I sort of try to interact with the most. It seems to be where people have found me. So if you go and you find me, it's at Jason_James_Richter on Instagram. And the reason it's that way is because somebody else took my name, so I can't have my name, and I don't want to fight with Meta over it, so I don't care. So I, you know, they keep prompting me to want to like get verified and like give them $20 a month, and I'm like, I really don't have it. If they want to give me a badge, I'll take it, but you know, I don't have the money. I don't have 20 to burn like that to give the richest guy in the world. I don't got it. So
thank you so much for joining us. This means a lot. For sure. And
it does.
Thank you both for having me.
Thank you so much, man. Well, kid, how'd it go in your eyes?
Amazing. Some could say it was worth $1 million.
I love that. So what did you take away from it? What was it, everything you wanted? Tell me your first thought.
It was everything I wanted, a chance to thank him for all that he'd done.
And he was so cool about it, too.
Yeah. Great.
You haven't been on the show in a long time. You did a little better than the first time, don't you think?
Well, I'm talking about something that I know very well.
Yeah. Well, you'll be back.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Sid. I love you.
Thank you. I love you, too.
This interview is worth $1 million.
Yes.
Thanks for hanging out with us at the DJ Bob Show. If you liked this episode, drop us a line at djbobrunkel@gmail.com. That's djbobrunkel@gmail.com. Let us know what you liked most about this episode and what other guests we should have on the DJ Bob Show. Thanks so much again for hanging out with us. This is Nate Beagle, your humble announcer.